Blog Talk Radio.
Good night and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. We're going to skip the intro music, Mr. Edwards, because we have a lot going on and we want to get right into it. How are you doing tonight on this fine Wednesday?
I can't complain. I'm watching what's happening around the world, presidential election, things like that. It is ugly, but I'm really more concerned about what is happening in the St. Louis area with regards to these homicides of African-American activists and et cetera, which looks like nobody's been dealing with. And then I understand we've got some screaming and hollering going on up here. Oh, by the way, somebody put out a false information last night that there is going to be a African-American museum opened right behind Westminster Church in downtown Minneapolis. I said, oh, okay, so where are they getting the money? Because that's the most expensive property you and I know in the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
People
sure
just
is, sure
putting
is.
Stuff out left and right as it pertains to the museum. What they're really talking about, Don, is that the museum, the building that we all thought we had until Knutson took it in a lawsuit,
mm-hmm.
they're going to turn it into a bed and breakfast.
As it should be. Because the place is kind of little for the museum, Mr. Edwards. If you ever went to the second floor, it was like going into one of them Willy Wonka chocolate flax factory rooms where you go up the steps and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And it was really wasn't a place to really display anything up there. And I just got a chance to walk through it with the curator, Ms. Roxanne Givens, who gave me a tour of the place with no one there. And I just kind of scratched my head because basically all they had at the time, Mr. Edwards, was that first floor with the baseball stuff that wasn't theirs. And
That was the Hardeman family. Came from the Hardeman family. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I was just kind of, how is this going to be? Now, I can see if you're going to tear down the walls and with that $3 million plus dollars and expand it and put a little walking pathway there where you could, make what do you call those things? Kind of like a loft where people could walk around, 380 degrees and look down. But, that wasn't, we don't think like that these days. But, even speaking of that, Mr. Edwards, I was really disgusted, pissed off, and upset again because, number one, I can't believe Prince is dead because if you look at my iPad, I don't have nothing but his music on there. And because I don't like listening to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the Star Tribune. There's a headline, no contract, no official info exists for Prince tribute concert at U.S. Bank Stadium. And then I start to look around into this Graceland company who runs Graceland down in Memphis. And, they built a 400-room hotel on Graceland, got some things
mm-hmm.
from some high-end dining, and they're making millions and millions and millions of dollars every year off that just wonderful institution. I went down there a couple times in Memphis going to the Church of God in Christ Convocation.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so I turned around and I happened to notice there was a story on Facebook about one of the members of the NAACP, Kathy Jones. And I like Kathy Jones. She's a letter carrier. She does what she needs to do. She gets busy and she's about her business. And I think she has a good heart. And so I wanted to put congratulations. So the person that posted the story, I said, I can't even post anything on this bogus website. That person took it as I was attacking and wrote up there, Don Allen targets women. And I said, wait a minute.
Oh, my, they're making me like Donald Trump. Okay.
yeah. And actually, Mr. Edwards, this young lady called me tonight, and I had to explain to her in detail that I was upset because there was a website where I couldn't leave a comment and that, I wasn't attacking anybody. But he says, you always attack. I said, wait a minute. You're talking about your friend, Nikema Levy Pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And we're just going to put it out there. I says, number one, man or woman, if you got over $3 million to open a museum, a black history museum in Minneapolis, you got to go through the struggle. But fortunately and unfortunately, Prince died. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
you had an opportunity to jump on top of that and take control of those archives of those items that need to be, those artifacts that are hanging on his fence out there around Paisley Park that will be worth millions of dollars in less than 5 years
mm-hmm.
as a memorial tribute to him that somebody other than us is going to take advantage of, which they have. And now we got this company, Graceland, from England, that's run Graceland, coming up here, and they're doing it. They're doing it. And still, to this day.
Yeah, they're
going to
manage Prince's Entertainment Center facility. Yep, sure are.
Mr. Edwards, my wife and her girlfriend from the East Coast, who's a doctor, already have tickets, paid $100 to take one of the first tours apiece. Okay?
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah, my wife came to me and said, me and so-and-so, we're going to go to Paisley Park. I said, what you mean you're going to Paisley Park? He said, my new girlfriend, the tickets were $100 apiece. I said, what? You know, and they're damn near sold out, Mr. Edwards. People from around the world.
I know that when they were preparing for his internment / funeral, I know that they at Walt Chamberlain Airport at the Humphrey Terminal, which is the international terminal, there were so many people flying in here from all around the world that the airlines were just rubbing their hands together in glee. And I had heard that story that. Actually, the majority of the first sales were just that. They were people from outside the United States, man. And I understand that there's a possibility they could be booked up for the next at least 6 months, and they'll let it roll from there.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
Wow.
The only downtime they're looking at is the only downtime is during the cold, like in the January, February month. They're looking at, but then again, it's going to still be rolling because they'll make a lot of money. And lo and behold, Mr. Edwards, I'm looking around and I find that there's something at St. Thomas that just happened at 4 p.m. Finding common ground between public safety and racial justice, and they had a panel. They had a very left-leaning panel with Cedric Alexander, the CNN law enforcement analyst, a member of the White House Task Force for 21st Century Policing. Hennepin mm-hmm. County Attorney Mike Freeman was there.
Nakeem Alibi-Pounds.
Yes, Nakeem Alibi-Pounds, R.T. Ryback, Nachika Afia, Director of Criminal, Director of Criminal Justice for the Open Society Foundation, and it's moderated by some law professors from St. Thomas. So, I mean, they're down there with this agenda, and I think the first agenda we need to clear up before we have any other agendas in my mind is, where is the money for the museum? What happened to it? They said, Don, you're just attacking women. I said, I don't care if you was a 6'8" Negro man. Mm-hmm. And you screwed off that kind of money, and we don't have a museum, and Prince is gone. You have an opportunity here even to turn this museum around by standing up. See, Mr. Edwards, they couldn't even get five black folks from Minnesota to rub some nickels together to secure Paisley Park, to secure his legacy. They had to go outside, and the bank already knew that. Brimmer Bank, Brimmer Foundation, they're rubbing their hands together because they knew that, Minnesota, we can't get five black people to decide on the temperature of ice water.
You know, let me just say something on this thing with Brimmer, who are the trustees appointed by the district court of Carver County. You know, these folks are giving this man's money away to each other. And the so-called heirs are going to be lucky if they take down $1 million out of what ultimately could be as much as $750 million or more. And let me tell you the real slick piece that they pulled. Now, when Brimmer Bank indicated in May that they had made a decision that the Mixed Blood Theater would not be able to have their 40th anniversary gathering at Paisley Park, they knew just what Mixed Blood Theater was going to do, and Mixed Blood Theater did that earlier this week in Hennepin County District Court when they sued for $350,000, okay? Now, there was no reason whatsoever not to allow Mixed Blood Theater to go ahead and have the gathering there and leave with whatever fundraising they would do, which would probably have been, I don't know, $140,000, maybe $135,000, et cetera. You know, think about that, and for our listening audience, think about how clever that was of these folks taking care of each other, okay? No way in the world that that Mixed Blood Theater should have been put in a situation in which they then maintained that there was egregious harm to their fundraising capabilities, and they're now suing for $350,000. I'm surprised they didn't sue for $1 million. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Bremer Bank, Bremer Trust are going to pick up as much as $20 million as
quote-unquote
executors and administrators of Prince's assets and et cetera. And I bet you that not a single person that works for Bremer at the highest possible level ever went to a Prince concert.
Yeah, or it's black.
Yeah.
Or it's black.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, Bremer really didn't have anybody black. But anyways, I agree with what you say. Let me just say this, too, because there was a lot of information I see in the paper today. Star Tribune, boy, they do a great job of taking information off other people's websites. But anyways, they're talking about the fact that certain considerations were not being followed through on with regards to the concert, the memorial or legacy concert that Prince's sister talked about when she made the announcement in July. Well, WCCO at 6 o'clock this evening reported that they had received, after running that story at noon and running it on their websites and everybody saying, "Oh, it was terrible. They're not going to be able to do it." Somebody has retained a very powerful PR company who told WCCO for the purposes of the 6 o'clock news that they would be contacting them in a couple days to tell them that, contrary to what is being said, plans are being made to have that concert here and being worked on. See, it got started when the Sports Facility Authority reared up and said, "Well, we don't know anything about the date because we don't have any signed contracts." See, all of this to create havoc while Prince's estate is being bastardized and robbed. It's really a shame. It's really sad. That's how we have been beaten to our knees, particularly in the African American communities of Minnesota. It's really sad, Don. Yeah. But go ahead. Mm-hmm. You had some additional things. People were upset about what? I mean, what are they upset about?
I mean, they're just upset. I mean, it's like they use that as a defense. Number one, I don't target or hate any woman. But the thing is, if you're doing something in the community, I mean, we have a legacy, what did I put up there? Just in North Minneapolis alone, we have legacy blight. And I wrote, "Thank you, Belton. Thank you, RT. And thank you, the current placeholder mayor."
Mm-hmm.
And people were saying, "Well, why are you attacking Cheryl Seldon?" I said, "I'm saying that all these mayors were in office. One is still in office, and all of them were saying the same thing. And we have nothing completed, no turnaround." I mean, for God's sake, this morning, Fox 9 News was doing a story about the tornado that happened March 22nd, 2011. The best story they could find to do, Mr. Edwards, was about the liquor store on Broadway and Penn, how they came back, you know? And of course, liquor store in the Black Hood is going to come back because that's where you make some money. You know, and I'm like, come on. I mean, that's the best. But they did say that people are not any better off than they were after the tornado. That totally changed the neighborhood. You know, you got people throwing up.
Yeah, but see, a lot of money came through on that tornado. There were there were a certain group of people that made a tremendous amount of money and paid off and paid themselves and et cetera, because there has never been a final audit on the tornado and how much money was spent. I have documents in the files of yours truly in which an enormous amount of money was immediately given in the hours following that tornado, if you will. And I'm like you, Mr. Allen. I just don't see where the improvement has come. I'll tell you this, I don't know that we can stand many more articles talking in terms of how the prosperity is up, crime is down, and et cetera. And you're having at least one person a night being shot and at least wounded, and at least one to two every week. See, they've now finally confirmed the numbers that this columnist was putting out way back in March and was warning what we were getting ready to get hit with. They're now confirming that over 275 people have been shot in Minneapolis and 180 of them have been shot right in North Minneapolis. Oh, yeah, that was in the Star Tribune. They slipped that in to the article that was written about the crime problem and fighting the crime problem and dealing with the crime problem and et cetera. When this columnist, when this journalist was saying that in early March, that we already had, we were approaching 60 people that had been shot, and at that time about 8 or 9 that had been had been DOA leadership, so-called leadership, some of the same people that you've named, were running around talking about that's just far-fetching, that's outrageous, that's not happening. Now, the white newspaper gives the number of 275 shot since the first of January. And folks are like, oh, my God, it's out of control. It's been out of control. In fact, it's been out of control since the early 1990s when we had United for Peace running around here. Okay? A lot of money, man. Yeah. A lot of money has been poured into these communities. And what folks better understand is that when the great white fathers sit down in their corporate offices and et cetera, be they downtown or in Golden Valley or wherever it is, you know, that's the first thing they talk about. They say, well, you know, we have financed this colored community to a tremendous amount of dollars and et cetera, and they just can't seem to handle it. They just can't seem to get it together. And nobody wants to talk about that.
Yeah, no one wants to say a word.
Yeah, nobody wants to talk about it. Now we have all kinds of other problems. Like I said, at the top, we have a situation in which manipulation was actually done by individuals who are sympathizers and supporters of Black Lives Matter, who have set a dangerous situation now that threatens the safety of the student athletes in Minneapolis North and a football game that they have coming up in northern Wisconsin, in which very extreme and dangerous white supremacists have said they're going to get them some monkey meat. Now, you know what that's a cold word for. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, let me just say this. This columnist contacted the Minneapolis Special School District number 1 yesterday, first the communication department, then the office of the superintendent, to ask what kind of security measures were being taken. They said, we'll have something to say when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the public information officer who I've known for years. I didn't even know she was still around, Gail Pawaki, who was involved in the murder and the killing of Sal Saran Scott in this city 20-some years ago, actually told the superintendent's office that she had talked to yours truly for 20 minutes yesterday and got my mind straight. I said, I'm sorry, she's a liar. There was no conversation between she and I. She never gave me a call back. I don't know what she's talking about. I don't know why she would tell that lie, particularly in this modern age of technology where all you have to do is take out your phone and show who called you.
Yeah, and it
but
shows
I'm just
how long you're giving
this because there's such danger out here right now for our communities, man.
I agree 100%. And people, you mentioned something earlier about, you know, the reporters getting their news off Facebook. Now, we've seen several examples of that over the last couple days here. An article by in the Star Tribune by Mr. Janney. You know, he's quoting stuff off folks' Facebook pages, basically, Mr. Edwards. And
that's what I'm being told.
From what I'm understanding, he's not really talking to these folks.
Well, I can tell you that there was a specific statement in his column that, as a journalist, and he would learn this in Ethics 101, that he should have identified the fact that the statement that he was writing as if it was his own reflection was actually made by Inspector Jost of the 4th Precinct on a radio program on an urban contemporary station here this past Sunday. The words in that column are the exact words spoken by Inspector Jost on Sunday in a telephone call to the program in question. I'm not understanding that, if you will. I saw some other quotes or statements in there that I know for a fact came from individuals, if you will. And, you know, you as a journalist, you have an obligation to, in situations where you know that by not doing it, you're plagiarizing, okay, serious ethical violation. And people are talking, and then when you tell me about this conference over at Hamlin, or wherever
St. Thomas
with professors, you know, so them folks ain't been out. They have not walked near step into the volley of fire, and I'm talking about gunfire and violence that is ripping these cities apart. St. Paul appears to have toned down a tad. Minneapolis is just totally out of control. just totally out of control, man. And I'm listening to all these people talk in terms of the approach and how things should be done. And I can tell you that none of those folks are out here. The people that are out here, the Urban Consortium, COI, another group under the leadership of the Reverend Charles Yates, if you will, under the leadership of Ferrone Brown, and these men and their supporters and fellow activists are just being totally ignored, pushed out of the process. You know, you got Mike Wynn over there at Emerge that cut off the program to work to try to hire young African Americans. We talked about that on these shows three months ago. Now
mm-hmm.
we're into the fall.
Sure do.
These young men have no work, no employment, no nothing. Okay, the only thing that they see is a bleak future, if you will, and everybody plays crazy.
Yep, they're playing real crazy right now, like they don't know what's going on. But you know, Ms. Harris, I've been watching here on, you know, Deed has been really pumping out these RFPs for different grants.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking people to apply, do this, do that, do this for this grant. They got so many out there right now for so much money. And I just have this really sneaking suspicion that they're going to give it to a couple of folks and say, well, we did it. You know, and
I'm confused, Ms. Allen, because I have been told and I have heard constantly since the end of the legislative session that $35 million has been pumped into the community. And allegedly there will be another $35 million pumped in for next year. That's $70 million. So I'm trying to figure out where is it at? Okay, I know that our good friend, we haven't heard from him for a long time. I know my good friend, Lewis King, is making so much money now just off his concession stand and the concession wagon that he has that is outside of the U.S. Bank Stadium. That congratulations, Lewis, because Lewis is making so much money right now, and Clarence Hightower is not far behind it. Okay, all right.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And but go ahead, Don. We got a call coming in. You go ahead, pick it up.
Yes, yes. Okay, we got a call coming in. Here we go. Caller, 827. You're live on the air.
No, I'm on the air.
What? Yes, you are.
No.
You're
no,
live
no,
on the air. M.
Okay. Anything
we need to... Hello.
Yeah, Ib, you're live on the air, sir.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought you got another caller. I heard things
okay,
going
right.
on.
Oh, man, you showed it to me. All right,
no, Mr. Evers taking another call in the studio, but he'll be right back. Go ahead.
All right. Go ahead, Don.
We got Ib on the line with us, Mr. Evers.
Who do we have?
We have Ib
on
the line.
Oh, I'm sorry, we got
right
a call because I had just gotten a call on an update with regards to the threats against the Minneapolis North High School's football team and the African-American community. But you said we have a caller. Let's get the call in. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Oh, gentlemen, I didn't want to. Yeah, this is, you know, Mr. M. I'm listening to the program as I do every Wednesday to get my, you know, enlightenment, the news that you can't get anywhere else. And,
mm-hmm.
boy, I guess the first comment I'd like to make, if I could, is just a statement. And that statement is on this date, September 14th, 2016, racism is alive and well in our country. And I say that to say, here, young men from the North High School football team going just to play a football game. I mean, these are community events. These, you know, what a great thing for a community to see someone from another area, from another community, to come and play their team in the spirit of competition. But no, they think that they have to threaten these young men, that they have to. So, you know, have we come far? Yeah, we've come far, but when we hear things like, you know, the situation with Mr. Kaepernick.
Absolutely.
And,
talk about it. Yes, sir.
And I happen to hear a comment that one of our great sports legends, you know, said that he would never do anything like that, that Mr. Kaepernick is doing. He would never even stoop to something so low as that.
Oh, my God. Who was that, Michael Jordan?
Shaq.
My man Shaq did this?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm really disappointed.
I am, too. I'm very much disappointed because, you know, all he's doing is just pointing up what we're seeing every day. And, and I think what happens is people get to a point where, you know what, enough is enough. You know, when is it? And we all have different tolerances for anything, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think Mr. Kaepernick just finally said, you know what? I mean, somebody's got to draw a line in the sand now because this thing is just completely run amok. And I'll give you one more example. I mean, and I don't want to take up your time, gentlemen, because you have so much information to give, and I'm just really hopefully being a contributor.
Mm-hmm.
But as I pick up, you know, a paper that has been referred to by a gentleman, you know, at one time he would call this paper the Johannesburg Times, but I'll refer to
Star Tribune. I used to hear about that, and that person.
Yeah, there was a person that was, you know, referred to it as the, but on the very front page of today's September 14th, 2016, biggest income gain in 50 years.
Isn't that amazing?
Decline in poverty was the biggest since
1960. Yes, decline in poverty. I'm sorry, sir. Go right ahead, Ian.
Decline in poverty was the biggest since 1968 as the effects of the recession finally fade. And I'm supposed to buy this? I'm supposed to believe this?
I can't speak for anybody else but myself. I certainly join you, sir. When I saw that early this morning, I said, I actually, you know, had to look at the date. I said, when was this? I thought I had gone back in time. I thought that a time machine had hurled me back to the 1950s or something. I said, well, my God, what are they talking? This could not be the America that I know, you know. And actually what I did today, M and Mr. Allen, I actually went out and went to some of the box stores and et cetera, just to see the long line of black people who have just come out of poverty. And I got to tell you, gentlemen, damn, I didn't see that. You know, I didn't see it happen. And so I went and made a couple tours around the metro of all of this construction that's going on, because, man, there's a lot of construction. You can't, you know, you got to be careful that you make the wrong turn. But here's what I saw. Now, I saw on every project, 99% of the construction projects on just the highways alone. We don't even talk in terms of all the construction going on downtown. 99% of the crews that I saw were Caucasian. Okay, I saw a couple crews that had a brother. Okay, in fact, I saw more white women than I saw African American males or African American females. And so I said, well, where is this data coming from? You know, so I don't know, gentlemen. Maybe, you know, M, and we have you here. Maybe you can help us out with, when did this prosperity descend upon us?
When you say us, I'm not exactly sure who you're referring to, but
us black people, us black folks.
But I happen to be, you know, downtown Minneapolis on some business today too, and I went down as I used to work right next to the, at one time was a building called the Star and Tribune.
The black and white building. Yes, I remember that.
At one
time,
within the last several years before I was able to actually get out of that prison that I used to work in.
Okay.
And I went down there today, and you would not believe that area. It is so open and airy with parks and Viking things, and all of these things are just set for the amusement and entertainment of those that can buy seat licenses and have the money to buy tickets to go into that Taj Mahal or Taj Mahziggy, as some people call it, of a stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see prosperity, but I don't see the faces of, you know, when I go to North Minneapolis, I see a total flip-flop. I had to go over to the Elks. I had to go to the Elks. There was a memorial service for a good friend of mine that I grew up, and they had a, you know, they had a gathering there, you know, in
a repast
from
yes,
my good friend.
Yes.
So I went there, and I just, you know, and I mean, I'm from the area. So, I mean, I'm north side, south side, St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't consider myself any side. Wherever,
mm-hmm.
The great Mahmoud El-Khati would say, wherever black people are, that's where I go. That's where
mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to St. Paul. I go to north side. But I tell you, the contrast, I'm coming through those few blocks from downtown Minneapolis to North Minneapolis, right around where the Elks is. I mean, it is really something to see. I mean, I don't see any prosperity in that. I didn't see any income gains in that area. I didn't see.
I have seen none there myself, and I've gone further up to what we now call the farther north end, in that we have a significant war going on between the north end and the south end, or the high north and the low north, whatever the heck that's supposed to mean. And you got to be careful as you're as you're driving, because you got to duck the gunfire. Okay. I mean, I hate to say it, because every time I kind of go through, and oftentimes I am, as a federal monitor, called to the scenes of these tragedies, and you know, I always remember the training, and that is to stay alert, Mr. Allen, that you as a former member of the military stationed at Fort Lewis, Washington, and et cetera, we have to stay alert and keep our head on a swivel and look at everything around us. But I just kept saying, I'm looking for the prosperity. I mean, that's why I went to the box stores. I went to Target and
mm-hmm.
and I went to Walmart and went out into some of the areas that are flourishing. And you're absolutely correct, sir. We've even gone so far here in Minneapolis is to rename that which, when I was a very, very young man, came up was actually entitled the far end of Washington Avenue and the juke joints. But, man, over there now, where that big Wells Fargo, oh, yeah, Wells Fargo, they did take quite a hit. They'll raise their rates and interest rate and et cetera. But the big Wells Fargo building, that beautiful park, which the taxpayers are going to pay for, and, of course, the People's Stadium. And I keep saying, gentlemen, and you heard me say it for a number of years, sure, it was the People's Stadium, but there was a group of people, African-Americans, that really did not participate in the construction and the profit that went into that. That's why I congratulated our friend, Louis King. He is going to be the most successful African-American entrepreneur with his stand, if you will. And then he also has a wagon outside, and actually it's a small male-looking vehicle. He's selling his smoke wings and et cetera at both sites. But they tell me that Lewis already, in the first two events, which were exhibition games, brought in over $250,000 just in his concession stand alone.
Wow. Well, maybe, you know what, you've really given me some inspiration, you know, Mr. Edwards. You know what I think I'm going to do?
Uh-huh.
I think I'm going to go to Walgreens, and I'm going to buy me some shoe polish, and I'm going to buy me a chair. And I'm going to set up a shoe shine stand down there. I think that's
Let me say, I will join you. I can't speak for my colleague, Mr. Allen, who has young family. Because I will join you. Man, I can see us
that's
singing together.
That's racist as hell.
I can see us singing together the Shoe Shine Boys song. Shining them shoes, man. Shining them white folks' shoes as they go through there.
That's racist
as hell. Whistling and singing. Now, I'm not a good singer. I don't carry a song real well, et cetera. But, you know, I can kind of do the Bo Jingles. That would be the way, and notice the word that I will use here. That will be the way that we will penetrate the economic screen that is, in fact, the U.S. Bank Stadium. We'll never be like Lewis.
Yeah.
But you're right, man. The dynamic duo. The one thing I can do, because I shine my own shoes, is know how to shine and snap that rag. Man, sir, if you would allow me, I will join you. Now, here's what will happen, though. The city will force us to purchase a shoeshine license.
Yeah, which doesn't exist.
That messed up,
until that
G.
Time. There hadn't been such a thing until that time, you know. Nobody ever had
a shoeshine
license.
We will be told by Homeland Security personnel who really control the outside of the stadium that you boys need you a shoeshine license. But see, I'm gonna ask them, can we audition? Because I think that we maybe even can get on the program that that Olympic swimmer was on night before last. He got embarrassed. I think that we can pop them rags and et cetera, and somebody may let us franchise our approach to the new method of shoe shining. Man, can't you see that? M, I praise you, my brother. You just came up. I've been thinking. How can the real black folks ever get in economically on the stadium? And you just gave it to me. Shining and snapping that ray.
But if I could, I could.
Oh, they don't have that. We should overcome.
If
yes,
I could
sir.
Just.
Hey. Go right ahead,
have a few more minutes just to...
Go right ahead, sir.
Sure, you gentlemen have a show, and I don't really, you know, I'm just hopefully a caller, contributor, but I guess I do have a question, and I guess, you know, Mr. Edwards, I would like to address this to your co-host, Mr.
Okay.
Allen.
Okay,
go ahead.
I have a couple questions for Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen, are you there?
He's here. He's here. Big up, Don.
Well,
hey, I'm here. Go ahead.
I happen to do a little research, you know, because I'm very interested in a business that was at one time called the African American Museum of Minnesota. I'm very interested in that. And I had the opportunity, and as part of my research, I went on there's a thing called YouTube on the computer. I'm not really very well-versed in the computer, but, you know, I happened to find a YouTube program.
Okay.
And this particular program had, you know, Minnesota's African American Museum, great fanfare, big program. I think there was an actor or a gentleman I think I've seen at the Penumbra Theater that was just really espousing the virtues of this African American museum and how we really need to have that in our community. And it was a lot of people, fans around.
Okay.
Very impressive, very impressive. And at the end, credits rolled, and there was a couple of names as the producers of this program. One was, I believe it was Roxanne Givens, I think that was her name.
She was the founder and executive director and curator. Of the African-American or African Museum. Oh, my God. You must have been looking at titles going probably, 2011, 2010?
Maybe. Was it that? I don't know. I just happened to run across this video. As I say, as the credits rolled, I saw the name Givens. And then also I saw the name of Donald Allen as, you know, producing the program. And I, you know, so I began
not
to wonder.
Not our Donald Allen. Donald.
Well,
I don't know if that's
figure out if that's the same gentleman that occupies, you know. And I would just like to ask, I'm going to stop talking now, but I just want to ask. One question of if this is the Mr. Allen that produced the program, it seemed like he's very well knowledgeable about the African Museum. I just have one question. Where did the money go?
You know what? If I knew that, I know exactly what you're talking about. It was a promo video. I've been telephone called. You know, I have an internet marketing company, and Ms. Givens contacted me and said, can we sit down and talk? And this is before they even had the first of the three grand openings. As you know, they had like three or four grand openings.
In fact,
they had the same
sextet 2 years in a row for the grand opening. Go right ahead, Don.
they sure did. And so I moseyed over there on this one hot summer day when my air conditioning wasn't working, and I walked in there. I said, well, wow, I'll probably make enough money here to get my air conditioning fixed. I sat down and talked to her, and she says, well, you know, we're trying to get some promotions done for the video because we're having our first grand opening. I says, well, there's no one here. There's nothing but construction workers walking around, and the floors are dusty, so there's really no good pictures. So I tell you what, I will take pictures of your first grand opening and make a video, a promotional video, and then let's talk for them from at that point to see if you like it or if we need to move forward. So the grand opening came. My wife and I went. We didn't have any kids then. This was actually 2000. No, we did. We had our youngest one, our oldest one, I should say, was in a stroller. And so I walked around and took about 150 pictures of a variety of different things going on and a little bit of video and put my camera away. Went back the next week, and I put that production together. Sent it over to her, and I said, hey, you know, this is the promotional video. Would you like to sit down again? She never called me back after that, sent her that video, not once. And if you see on YouTube, I think it has something like maybe 400 or 500 hits. I mean, it did pretty good, but that was the end of it. I mean, there was nothing moving forward. There was nothing moving sideways. And that was it. And
wow.
So I am as clueless, M, as you are, because in a good faith effort, I went and put a damn good production together to promote the Minnesota African American Museum. I am a business person, and I do like to get paid. But unfortunately, you know, you put in $1,500 of work, because, you know, that's what our people make us do, put in the work until they can see it first. And they'll go into the other guy's office and give him the check up front. I never got a call back. So I put it on YouTube so that everybody can see it. You know, at this point, you know, in the win, lose, or draw, I wasn't getting nothing out of it. I wasn't getting any callbacks. So I said, you know, screw it. You know, put it on YouTube, leave it there, because it was too nice a video just to dump it and keep it on the hard drive, you know, in the house. And so that's the story of that video.
Wow.
I think there's two on. I think there's two on.
So you never got paid for your services?
No, not a nickel. Not a nickel. She wouldn't even call back to contract with me. Matter of fact, the last time I talked with her, she said people are volunteering to work for us. I said, oops, I'm not a volunteer. And that was it. That was the end of the conversation.
I watched the video, and actually, I mean, I have to agree with you. I thought it was very well done. I mean, I thought it was a very great representation of what they were planning or what they wanted to do. I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, but.
I am too. In fact, I'm kind of shocked that she didn't come up with anything, because she clearly spent about $3 million.
No.
Oops.
Mr. Edwards, you know what?
I knew.
Mr. Edwards, I knew they had some money over there, okay?
Yeah.
You don't pick up the phone and call someone. I had just got done doing a ton of videos for Turning Point. Turning Point has this annual fundraising dinner, where they have a client of the year, employee of the year, the features of the year, and I totally revolutionized that event that they have, sometime at Augsburg, sometime at a hotel. It's really classy, really high-end. I mean, all the who's of who's come there, and politicians, they set up video screens. I mean, the production was immense for Turning Point. And I guess someone had told her, hey, call Don Allen. He'll do a great job. And I'm grateful for that person referring me to Ms. Givens in the museum. But what turned out, and the reason why I decided, Mr. Edwards, I told Mr. Edwards a little bit about this, what I decided, what made me turn the corner was after I had no callback. I'm saying, wait a minute, they had one grand opening, they're having another one, then they're planning one more, but there's nothing in the museum.
I have to correct you, because it is a family that I've known and has deep roots here.
Likewise.
Them because they were from that side of the South Side.
Likewise.
That's the Hardiman family, because the only exhibit that they had, in fact, the Hardiman family had to threaten to sue Roxanne in order to get their artifacts back. That was the only thing that was ever there for a couple months as they were, you know, fixing up the building. And by the way, as we announced him at the top of this program, I announced that there is an article coming out in tomorrow morning's edition of the paper that is announcing that the facility, that building, which is, of course, on the historical site, is going to be turned into a bed and breakfast facility.
Oh, please.
And Mr. Allen was kind of making some jokes early in this program about how that can be done. I can't see him having any more than three rooms upstairs, and of course downstairs would have to be kitchen and a dining area, but maybe the coach house, which Mr. Allen and I remember having a conversation about 4 years ago about the coach house. In fact, people tell me that there are some artifacts that people have been looking for that they had donated that are there in that coach house. Oh, I take that back. I think Knutson, once they took over ownership as a part of the lawsuit, took that stuff and threw it out.
I can tell you, I actually was in the coach house.
Oh, my God.
I actually had a meeting. At the time, I was representing patients and they were very interested in working with that, and I was representing them, and I happened to actually have a meeting with Ms. Givens in the coach house that I noticed was really remodeled. It was very nice. It was actually functioning as her office, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then later that was taken over when Miss Givens relocated to Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken. Miss Jones and Miss Bebe Pounds took that facility over for their offices for a period of time. Am I correct, gentlemen?
Well, yes, you are. But and one more thing, Mr. Eric, you're absolutely right about the baseball memorabilia exhibit being inside the museum. But there's one little thing. I keep saying they had three grand openings. The third grand opening they had, I remember, Mr. Edwards, because I had called you, because a friend of mine, Mr. Lenny Chisholm, was in the yard. They had it outside. They wouldn't let anybody in the museum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I went up and looked in the window, and there was none of that. That big green picture board they had up there with the baseball memorabilia, all the pictures, none of that was in there. And the doors were locked.
Yeah, right. I heard about that. Yeah.
And they had everybody out in the yard, and people were asking questions like, well, are we going to get a chance to walk through the museum? Are we going to do this? Are we going to do that? That whole event was held out in the yard.
Yes, that was another one of those nice summer days. At one point, they had what looked like a hearse that was being used by the brother who had been appointed allegedly as the assistant curator, and he was going around to white suburban schools. See if you remember hearing about this with some of the Hardeman artifacts, talking about the history of Negro baseball. That lasted for about a year. But they picked up $200,000 or $300,000 in donations and et cetera from people that thought it was important that there be a identification of Negro sports history in Minnesota. Oh, Lord have mercy.
What a sad epitaph for that particular thing. But I'm hopeful that, you know, this community will get the museum and the historical perspective that they deserve. I mean, I think that's really what is kind of driving, you know, this madness that we're living in now. That we don't have a real base. We don't have a real focal point, you know, that say that we are together. See, there's power in numbers. There's power as we're together. And it doesn't matter if it's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. It can grow, and it can, but we are so disorganized. We are so scattered. We are so in our thoughts, in our working together with individuals, in our support of one another. I mean, it's just we really have to turn this thing around, man.
Absolutely, sir. Appreciate it. Stay in tune with us, Mr. Allen. I'm getting a text message that we're having a call coming in.
Yeah,
a number in Missouri.
Yeah, that caller can come back, because as soon as he or she calls back, I will let it through, because we were talking.
Yes, we need to get that through. And the reason,
is that
we have uncovered a very significant conspiracy of murder of African-American activists involved in the activities in Ferguson 2 years ago.
Wow. Well, maybe I should just hang up and,
Yeah.
I mean, no, just...
We're looking for that call to come back.
We need to patch you through.
Yeah, because we had we have possibly five since the first of the year, five African American activists who were all very much involved with the Ferguson / St. Louis situation, who had been murdered.
Wow, and I think you gentlemen may recall, you know, I actually was on the scene in Ferguson.
Yes.
And called into your program. Actually,
yes, you
with
did.
The protesters, I was right across the street from the police station. Very tense situation at that time.
Well, there's been payback. There's no doubt about it. The most recent death, a Mr. Fields, is what we're trying to get information from a very reliable source in the state of Missouri, if you will. If that person gets back
our
to
caller,
it.
Our caller is back. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
All right.
For the delay.
Hello, Mr. Allen, Mr. Edwards.
How are you, sir?
Good. Yeah, and I was calling about that information about the actually it's been since 2014. It's actually been six people killed all in the same way. The last one here was Darren Seals, who was the head of, or at least he started, was a co-founder of Hands Up United,
An organization that got a lot of play back in 2015 and et cetera. So that was the same Mr. Fields that was kidnapped, executed. Driven to a spot along the Mississippi River there across from East St. Louis, and his car was burnt, and he was almost unrecognizable. You're saying that these murders have been going on since 2014? Wow.
And actually the first one that took place was a young man named DeAndre Joshua, who was 20. And if you were the night that the grand jury came down with this decision not to indict the officer. The officer involved in that. The officer involved in that shooting, that was the same night that DeAndre Joshua was killed. And he was also killed in his car, and the car was burned. Exactly.
That's right. In fact, I think that Mr. Allen and I talked about it on this program at that particular time, and then I think, if I remember correctly, you called in and gave us some preliminary background on that, because we were also taking a look at the history of the county prosecutor, a man whose father was a St. Louis police officer who was shot and killed by an African-American back in 1966. And that county attorney there in St. Louis County is legendary for his hatred of black people. But can you give us a little bit more of what you have, your folks have learned down there with regards to these deaths? These were all individuals who had participated in the demonstrations and protests in Ferguson and the surrounding areas, Jennings and places like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Actually, the first one that we discussed, the DeAndre Joshua, he, interestingly enough, they thought there was a rumor going around that he was actually a witness or someone who testified in the hearing for the officer.
In the grand jury proceedings, right?
Grand jury proceedings. And I don't know if that's ever been cleared up or not, but anyway, there have been now six of them total. It should be five. One of the individuals, this is kind of interesting, who was killed was, I guess, in some type of altercation with a police officer, and actually wasn't killed in his car, from what I understand. But after the cleared the scene, at some point his car was torched.
Yes,
just
it was.
Like
I
all,
remember
just,
that.
Just
was,
like just,
yes.
just like all the other ones, which is kind of interesting. So I mean, this sounds very much like a series of executions, really.
Since this information became known to me, I did some checking with sources in Washington. Mr. Allen, what has been found out, and caller, is that I'm sorry. Do we have a first name for you, sir? I know that this is a sensitive situation in your position.
Well, Steve,
there in the state of Missouri is sensitive, but a first name so that we can.
Yeah, just Steve.
My understanding in the last couple of hours from sources familiar with the Washington Post story, and then I understand that you have a television station there, of course I should know, I mean, Kansas City, Missouri is my hometown. KCTV Channel 5 apparently sent a team to St. Louis and to the, because this latest victim, Mr. Fields, was killed in a small town called Riverview or something like
Riverview.
That.
Yeah, Riverview.
What
do
we know? What kind of town that is? It's right there on the Mississippi, looking across at East St. Louis.
It's actually a really small town. It's really small compared to Ferguson, because Ferguson is about, I believe, 21,000 or something like that, 22,000.
Yeah, right.
And Riverview's only about a little over, about 2,800, maybe 3,000 people. It's really small.
Okay, and I noticed that looking at the maps and other information that it is basically kind of isolated. I mean, it's peculiar. I mean, it's a small town just north of a major metropolitan, you know, city, St. Louis, but it's kind of like in the boondocks, if you will, and sits right on the river's edge. In fact, I did some research over the last couple of hours. It used to be a way back in the day, in the 1850s and 60s. It was kind of a stopping place, if you will, for travel on the Mississippi River, kind of a roughhouse town and et cetera. It was a place that Mr. Fields, as I understand it, would not have had any real reason to be there. So clearly he was kidnapped at another location. My sources are telling me that he was tortured. They were able to determine that, though his body was fairly, you know, seriously burnt, but he was tortured and then shot in the head. And then the car was torched. Does that seem consistent, sir, with what you're hearing there?
Oh, yeah, that's consistent. It's consistent with the other cases, too. And incidentally, this is interesting. He had a sort of an ongoing feud with the Black Lives Matter. And apparently there's a Minneapolis connection to this.
What?
Is there someone there named DeRay McKinson or something like that with Black Lives Matter? I don't know if that name rings a bell at all.
Sure it does.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Well, apparently he got into some type of physical altercation with him in Ferguson, I think in 2015, because he accused him of stealing money from the, I guess the organization that Mr. Seals had was sort of an umbrella-type organization.
Yeah.
And I guess he was kind of accusing him of stealing money. It was never proven or anything. But actually, I guess they got into a fight in a parking lot near the Ferguson police station. I guess there was a protest going on at the time, something happened there, which is very interesting. I can only find, we could only kind of find one mention of it in the news. I just thought that was kind of interesting, though. But
I think that's important, particularly the individual in question. Seems to be an individual who seems to have a history of moving around the country. And there were some questions about him. I had not heard his name in about 5 or 6 or 7 months. Ooh, yeah. Okay. And it has to. You're right to do with the money, the hundreds of thousands of dollars that came into Black Lives Matter, doing the disturbances and et cetera, and then the corrective action that was being taken during most of the latter part of 2015 and into early 2016. And by the way, is Black Lives Matter made any request to the Department of Justice or to the county attorney for St. Louis County
for a
more in-depth investigation and the impaneling of a grand jury?
No, not that I've heard of so far, no. No, and see, what it's kind of interesting because they had a pretty big feud going on between the two of them, between those two organizations, apparently. So
yes, they did, and some of that spilled over here that is being kept quiet. So that kind of makes a difference. Before we let you, well, we still have plenty of time. I received a message through the Rondex Group, which I'm affiliated with. You had some questions about pair of serious confrontations here between law enforcement and members of the Somali community, which closed down the Mall of America for a period of time Monday. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did, because we haven't been able to find a whole lot of information about it. And it seems like I don't know if Mall of America had something to do with it or not, but it just doesn't seem like too much information is coming out.
Has happened on that, gentleman, is that, first of all, there was a serious confrontation. In fact, on my television program to air Sunday here, we show some video of the confrontation that started around the, of all things, the concert, street concert, of a rapper who is very popular, particularly in Canada, who also was involved in the movie Captain Phillips, if you remember, with Tom Hanks. This particular rapper was considered to have betrayed the trust of somebody, but still his promoter brought him here to the Twin Cities for a Sunday afternoon concert. They closed off 5th Street and 6th Street, Mr. Allen, there by the Riverside Towers and et cetera. And as soon as the artist, this gentleman, came onto the stage, a group of Somali women charged the stage, a group of men. There was a battle there. There were threats for possibility that weapons were banished, were displayed. Law enforcement rushed him to an SUV, got him out of there. And then it really escalated, and there, in fact, on that situation Sunday, there was a pitch battle between police and these demonstrators, if you will, that lasted for almost 2 hours. As I said before, it has gone viral, the video of the confrontation. A couple of white officers were hit, and the reason I say that is that basically the demonstrators concentrated on their own Somali police officers, who were born and raised in that community, and African-American officers who were there became the targets of the attacks. Now, the Monday situation at the MOA was that the Monday and Tuesday were some kind of Muslim holiday, and so the Somali students at the major high schools did not go to class, and I understand that as many as maybe over 250 or more stormed the MOA. What was interesting, sir, that you need to know is that some sources attempted to put out information that these were African-American youth, and that is totally untrue. Okay, that is totally untrue. And no sooner did we say that than we see some calls coming in on our text messages, which they will have to call Mr. Allen
and they could come on the air if they have any questions. But, yes, we did have two major confrontations. And it surrounds the making of, and what happened was, nobody, I guess, paid any attention. HBO, either next week or the following week, either you or Mr. Allen can check it on the computers you have in front of you. HBO is going with a movie that talks about the recruitment of the first two or three Somalians. Actually, though one of them was an African-American, went to Cooper High School, Mr. Allen, who were killed in the conflict in Syria. And when folks found out that this rapper was in, he's the prime lead person in the in the adaptation, if you will, that's when a decision was made that he was to be made an example of. Now, we understand, gentlemen, that call came from Nairobi. That call came from Nairobi. It was funneled in because what happened, we're not supposed to tell this, but we the question has been asked, is that it appears to be a dispute going on amongst the clan within the tribes because information was forwarded to law enforcement. And in the video, a couple of Pacific people were identified by members of another clan, and they have been taken into custody. But it has been ugly here for the last couple of days with these conflicts because they really tore up the Mall of America. But now our major white media has not reported on either one of these conflicts.
So the Somalis are attacking malls? Is this
yes, what? Yes. They attacked the MOA. They went into the Mall of America and fought pitched battles with security and Bloomington police and possibly sheriff's deputies. Yes. Mm-hmm. And you haven't heard a thing about it, and you haven't heard about the pitched battle on Cedar between 5th and 6th on Sunday.
But what's the purpose of the altercation? Do we know any?
Yes, I just pointed out the confrontation. Well, I'm not sure what they're going to say about the Mall of America, but the confrontation on Sunday was in response to the black rapper, Islamic rapper, who is going to appear in an HBO special, which talks about the recruitment of young Somalis to fight for ISIS in the Middle East.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Edwards, his name is Kawan Wasami.
That's
HBO,
him.
Yeah, series on jihad recruitment for HBO is set in Minnesota. Oops. The cable network was here. The New York Times reported that Oscar winner Catherine Bigelow, director of The Hurt Locker, will be the executive producer of the series titled The Recruiters. Canadian rapper
and understand
poet.
What my colleague Mr. Allen said, gentlemen, him and our caller from outside the state. This is going to be a series kind of like The Wire. Remember The Wire, which was one of the toughest programs and really served notice on how bad the drug problem was in black America. Yes, Mr. Allen, thank you for that. What is the date, by the way, that this HBO special is going to air?
Okay, I am actually looking at the casting call between the producers. Just let me just get up down there. Da-da-da-da. The recruiter set in Minnesota to tell the story. I will pump it up right here. Set to write. It looks like it's within the next couple of months or not. They still have the audition notices out for 17.
Oh, they've already done some filming. Let me just say that's, of course, the way you deal because they've already said it's a series. It may be as many as 12, 13, or 14 parts. The initial parts, I can tell you, have already been done. That's what called attention to the rapper that showed up here, to the Somalian brother that showed up here, that Mr. Allen has just identified. Could you repeat his name again, Mr. Allen, so that folks on the international scene know? What was give us his name again.
His name is Kanaan. It's K-N-A-A-N Wasami with a W.
Yes.
I'm concerned. I'm very concerned. As I look at an article here on the internet, it looks like the Governor Dayton has talked to national security about this incident at the mall, and we don't know anything about this?
There again, sir,
yeah.
And,
well,
and to our caller from outside the state, there it is again. Here we have a caller that is pointing out what we've already known. You're right. The governor already talked to Homeland Security and to the National Defense Agency because, gentlemen, a call was intercepted from Nairobi, and there has been communication for the last number of weeks setting the stage for these confrontations.
Well,
if
I'd
you
like
could
to
repeat that again,
call.
Em, the information that you have acquired, that the governor
only that,
of the state of Minnesota
you know, the governor, the Minnesota Governor Dayton has been monitoring the situation. He's been in regular contact with the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, which is coordinating with federal law, federal and local law enforcement agencies and the Mall of America to ensure safety of Minnesotans. Well, why don't they tell us about this?
Because
well,
it is too sensitive and too dangerous, they
wow.
feel, because part of the electronic intelligence intercepts that have taken place is that there are actual discussions going on about, quote-unquote, Operation Vest. And I think all of
yeah,
you
and,
that
and,
are still on with
and,
us, our caller from outstate, all of
wow.
you know what I'm talking about, Operation Vest.
And I need to interject one thing. I just did a scrub of the news for this. Only one thing came up from the Minnesota Daily, it was dated September 12th. It says a block party concert in the Cedar Riverside neighborhood Saturday was disrupted by protesters concerned about how an upcoming TV show will depict their community. The headliner Saturday
Yes, because some of the fighting was in and around parts of the University of Minnesota campus, and that's the reason. The reason that
yep,
the Daily
yep, yep.
decided to
yep.
report it.
Please.
The Minneapolis Star Tribune was informed that it would be best not to report it, and then definitely not to report, and none of our television stations here reported the pitch battles that were fought at the Mall of America.
You know, gentlemen,
yep.
what I just read to you, this is M, what I just read to you, the byline of this is Johannesburg Associated Press, okay? So in other words, they know about this, and I live 3 miles from the Mall of America, and I don't know about it. Okay.
Yeah. And I want us to understand the Johannesburg newspaper, Johannesburg, South Africa, picked up this intel, and part of it has to do, gentlemen, with the electronic intercepts that took place. With regards to a directives, of course, cryptic and in code, for a military-style action here in the Twin Cities. And those actions took place on Sunday and Monday. Mm-hmm. Now, how in the heck does a newspaper in Johannesburg, South Africa, get information? And I appreciate what our caller is saying, is that you know he lives like 2 miles or 3 miles from the Mall of America, and here from 4,000 miles away, a newspaper in Johannesburg, South Africa, is aware of something
that
we are aware on this program. I mean, and this commentator is very much aware because I'm pushing the envelope a little bit about the electronic intercepts, but there has been a lot of watching ever since the explosion and the building blew up. On what was it, gentlemen? January 1st, 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a direct outgrowth of the familiarity, the activity by certain individuals in the attack at the Westgate Mall in Nairobi. Yeah. That's how serious this situation has become. I appreciate him, you taking the time, because folks would have said that this was just a bunch of garbage being made up by a bunch of fools and et cetera, and everything is okay. No, gentlemen, it is not. It is not. They came very close at the Mall of America to something that would come out of, quote-unquote, one of your best novels, if you know what I mean. But it happened because of electronic intercepts, and the people in question have already been identified by the NSA, by the National Defense Agency, and by the CIA.
Again, what I'm saying, you know, the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, are involved with this. I mean, this is not you know,
yeah,
in
because,
addition.
See, this is something that makes the U.S. Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, Andy Luger, extremely agitated because what has happened is that Washington has taken control of the investigation directly from Washington. See, this happened one time before, and unfortunately I cannot get into it. This happened once before where the investigative nature was taken out of the hands of the local U.S. attorney because there was a feeling that there wasn't the kind of priority that should have been set. Obviously, the governor of the state of Minnesota and all these folks are the same party, the Democratic Party, got pressure from the Kamazian brothers and the people who own the MOA, the Mall of America, and they said they're sick and tired of this. And people were scared to death with the fighting that went on Monday inside the Mall of America. So, if I could, our caller from outstate, are there any other questions that you have for us, sir? We appreciate you taking the time and giving us information on clear assassinations of African-American activists who unfortunately were involved in Ferguson, Missouri.
Yeah.
And the murders started in 2014. Wow.
2014, right. I do have a question, though, about what's the relationship between the African-American community and the Somali community there?
Put a suit on, go down and try to catch a cab. You ain't going nowhere.
Oh.
Okay.
far too many of the Somalis think that we African-Americans did not pay the price and did not fight for our freedom. There are some people that, you know, say that they get along with them well and et cetera. I have not detected, quote unquote, that. I have detected that there is real disrespect for the legacy of Black Americans. And so that's an interesting question, sir. That
certainly is.
Asked.
I think your observations are absolutely true. I mean, I'll tell you what I think. You know, they can't drive. They can't walk across the street. They can't, they walk in the middle of the street. They pay no attention to, they have an arrogance. For some reason, I sense a real arrogance, and I really sense, personally, a lot of gaming. And I say that because having worked in social services, and I saw a number of, individuals come in, Somalis, and I swear, I saw several of them. They would come in their native garb, can't talk English, but I would see them working at Target later that evening. Okay?
Yes.
With regular clothes on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Regular American clothes. Well, what they figured out, they have figured out, how to work the system.
Yes.
And see, and with the fact that, you don't know, there's so many Muhammads, there's so many Ahmeds. Now, people are going to call me a racist, and that's fine,
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if I am, I'm particular to African Americans. But I think
that's racist as hell.
We've been
shorted. Come on, Don. You're absolutely right, man. Your point is well made.
We've been shorted.
Sir. And so. Let me just ask this question. Is there a specific reason, sir, or are there some things that you're hearing that caused you to ask that question of us?
Well, I know in the past, I think, wasn't there an incident at a high school there in
Minneapolis?
Yeah. And I've heard that there have been various little incidents that have taken place around the city. And then you had also mentioned that they had, during this incident just a few days ago, that they had kind of targeted African-American police officers. So I was just wondering.
They most definitely did, as well as their own. We have very few. We have a total of 6 Somali officers on a force of 850, though the department has worked hard to bring them in. We had 1 Somali female, unfortunately. She didn't make it, but we have a couple of Somali officers who are sergeants and are very outstanding. But it was interesting that they were targeted as well as African-American police officers, including one of the officers is a very respected officer and citizen born and raised in Minneapolis. His father, his uncle, his sister are all police officers, if you will. He is also the coach of the most successful
sports program, football program here in the city of Minneapolis. Now he's not a man to be messed with because he goes 6'5", 330 pounds. Okay, so ain't nobody's punk. But it was interesting that some of these agitators knew who he was, if you will, and tried to provoke him. In fact, we have a video of a bottle just missing his head, as well as we have a couple of white officers being hit. But you're right, sir. Your recollection is correct. In the Sunday confrontation, they targeted African-American and their own Somali officers. And it's just hard for us over the last couple of days to understand what that is all about, because the oldest or most veteran Somali officers who have been on the department for about 5.5 years have grown. They grew up in Cedar Riverside. That is the so-called Somali community. Of course, now our Somali citizens are everywhere.
Oh, okay.
But they have no respect and appreciation of what black Americans had to go through in this country for 400 years. And so I have to be honest with you, sir. But I want to thank you. Appreciate you taking
You're
the
welcome.
Time. And
sure.
If there's any update, certainly we appreciate you getting back to us next Wednesday with regards to these sanctioned murders of African Americans in the St. Louis area. Because, man, as the caller M is saying, and et cetera, they're suppressing everything. And I just think that it was good journalism. I know it sounds self-serving. I could give a damn. I think that it was great journalism that we exposed some things here. And we don't even begin to have the resources, Mr. Allen, that the big, powerful white news stations and newspapers and et cetera have. But they have put a lid on this activity that's going on in this city.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, sure have.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you,
sir.
All right,
bye-bye.
Mr. Allen, we've kind of been hoggish. Any other calls out there? Maybe there's some people that may want to call and question us about the question posed to us by the gentleman from outstate. What is the relationship between the Somali community and the African-American community?
Well, now that you bring it up, Mr. Edwards, I tried to get the gentleman on the show tonight, but he was he had to work. He works overnight. From over in the morning.
Could you identify who you're talking about?
Please
identify. Yes.
Yeah, his name is Grant Nichols. He was a former Columbia Heights School Board director who was accused of writing something derogatory about the Somali community in Columbia Heights and around the city, the immigrant Muslim community. And I know M remembers this. The Governor Mark Dayton, and the Commissioner of Education, Ms. Britta Casales, went out. And the school organized a walkout of the students to go to a press conference that the governor and commissioner were having to ask Mr. Nichols to resign. Mm-hmm. And because of his post on social media, well, Mr. Nichols found out that a coworker of his went into his locker. You work at those places where you have lockers and you trust people. Well, anyway, a coworker of his went in his locker, Mr. Edwards and him, and got a cell phone, went to Facebook, and posted this comment. Well, he had no proof until last week, which he supplied, this network, Mr. Edwards and I actually posted on ourblacknews.com a legal document, affidavit, with the gentleman. It's been redacted. His last name is not on there, but his first name is Randy, who admits to taking the guy's phone and posting this statement on social media.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I sent the thing around. The thing has the article I posted has over 200 shares. I sent it to the Star and Tribune, to the reporter who actually wrote the original story that kind of slammed Mr. Nichols. And surprisingly, out here in Columbia Heights, or where I stay at in Columbia Heights, Mr. Nichols is really close friends with several of the Imans out here who have forgiven him after this has come to light. And now I guess we're sitting back waiting for the governor and the commissioner to apologize, because this man, the job wasn't a full-time job. It paid a little money. He has a couple of kids and a wife and, pays rent and mortgage like everybody else. And I think it was wrong for them to come out here and put on this grandstand sideshow against this, another one of their white counterparts, who happens to be a Republican, who sat on the school board, and we come to find out that he was not the perpetrator of this social media comment. I do think there is an apology due to Mr. Grant Nichols, and hopefully we can have him on the show here in the future to go into detail to talk about what's going on and what's happening with that. So I just wanted to get that out.
Let me just cut in. I think it's important also that our listening audience, gentlemen, know that it was the Human Resources Department of this company, which has national offices in the East. For whatever reason, they decided that they didn't like what they were hearing, and it was the corporation that this gentleman works for in a southern suburb that they came in. They brought their experts in, and they're the ones that broke this wide open and made Randy sign an affidavit that he was the perpetrator and instigator of this situation, which caused the former school board member very dearly. I think it's important, Mr. Allen, that our listeners know it wasn't something that was uncovered by a bunch of guys on the corner. His corporate leadership sent their experts in here. How they got it, I understand it's confidential. I don't need to know. Don't want to know. But what happened was they made Randy, who is another Caucasian, come clean with his role.
Yeah. But there's also an irony to this, Mr. Edwards and M. With a 33% black population and a little bit more immigrant, I'm going to kick it up to about 45% if you include the immigrants that are out here in Columbia Heights. The commissioner nor the governor inquired about the proficiency rates that are well below 30%. No one inquired about the graduation rates and the time it takes for black African-Americans and immigrants to graduate from the Columbia Heights high schools, and why out of 800 schools in the state, a little bit more, that the schools out here rank under 800. You know, no one asked about that, but yet they really went after this guy. And still, we have the same situation out here. The schools aren't changed, are different. There was a huge fight at the high school graduation this year.
Yes, Mr. Allen, we have about 2.5 minutes. The community needs to know about what happened at the graduation and the damage that was done.
I just have to go back to my initial statement calling in racism is alive and well in the Twin Cities area. You know, and until we decide that, you know, that this doesn't matter, until we get to a point where we want to educate our students, where we want to educate whoever they are.
Mm-hmm.
For a better life, we were going to continue on this spiral. I mean, it just seems like we're on a treadmill. It really does.
Well, I mean, the graduation rate and attainment and achievement rate in Columbia Heights is horrible. But yet, as Mr. Allen said, no one came out to talk about that. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Gentlemen, looks like Mr. Allen there in Studio A. Looks like we're down to the end of this hour and a half program. My prayers are with the Minneapolis North team. I'm hoping that the necessary security preparation, because I was personally told by the office of the superintendent that there had been a conversation with me, which was a lie, and I later found out that there is no plan to secure or to make safe African-Americans who are journeying to Cameron, Wisconsin, for a neutral site game. I think it's terrible, and I think it could be very tragic.
Yeah, we're going to see what happens with that.
Wow.
So.
All right.
Ball of America, I don't know if I'll be going out there anytime soon. So.
I don't think I'll be close there no time soon, not with the intercepts from Nairobi, Kenya. All right, gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Take us on home.
We shall overcome.